It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, you're here. Your host here on WGN Radio. Hope that you enjoy the show as we wind our way through what is the second to last day of weekend of January. Certainly, we now remember what winter's like a little bit after having to put on an extra layer earlier this week. This morning's show, I'm going to talk about a few things that I think have big long-term consequences to the future of outdoor recreation and also to the future of wildlife management. And the first thing I want to start off with is what has happened with the price of energy, oil, and gas, and what has happened to the price of commodities, most notably corn, wheat, and soybeans. And you might be saying, what do those two have to do together? They have everything to do with the future of wildlife management on the North American prairies and into southern Canada, which is the heart of the migratory bird corridor for America, as well as South America, Central America. Millions and millions, actually tens of millions, over 100 million birds originate in what is called the prairie pothole region and work their way south across the continent. And these are birds, everything from sanderlings and plover and snipe and killdeer, all the way to geese and ducks and swans and herons and cranes. So it is the epicenter of the continent for breeding bird populations, wetland bird populations. In particular, waterfowl are the most numerous of all of that. So beginning with the great oil boom of a few years ago with fracking in North Dakota, we've all read, and I've actually been there to see it, what's happened in North Dakota and southern Saskatchewan is drilling rigs just rumbled over the countryside, and I mean rumbled over the countryside. No roads, they simply went across fields and put in drilling pads and fracking and hydraulic and water and mess, and next thing you know, you had a mini city, and they called them man camps, and the busiest Walmart in the world was in a little tiny town in North Dakota, Mandan, North Dakota, the single busiest Walmart in all the world, because so many people were coming to North Dakota, they had no place to stay, there were no stores. It absolutely was the gold rush of 1849 all over again, except this was not 1849. This was 2008, 2009, 2010, 11, and 12. It was really ripping. Today, the place is turning into a ghost town. All across North Dakota and Saskatchewan, where the huge influx of people came, they're now leaving. Just that sucking sound you hear is not oil coming out of the ground. It's people fleeing North Dakota. And if you don't have to spend a winter in North Dakota, believe me, you wouldn't want to spend a winter in North Dakota unless you are absolutely 100% addicted to ice fishing. And then you have a long season. So couple that with, and so the huge energy surge on the prairies gobbled up lots of land that had been used by wildlife, everything from mule deer to pronghorn, antelope, and of course birds. And you couple that with, at the same time, an incredible spike in commodity prices. Corn over $8, soybeans $15, wheat over $5, $8 actually. And you had the combination of the American and Canadian farmer ripping up every piece of land that had been in native prairie or sod and planting it to corn and soybeans because they had never seen prices like this. Coupling that with the energy boom, and it was a very, very sick picture for one of the most important ecological areas on the North American continent. And there's no way that people could move fast enough to counteract this. Land that in Rock Lake, North Dakota sold for $200-$250 an acre for the previous 20 years and nobody wanted it, $2,000 an acre, and you couldn't find it. All across the upper Midwest, the agricultural belt was just, land was going up five, in some cases 10 times in a period of a couple of years. standing back, looking backwards is always a good thing to do. You knew it wasn't sustainable. Who would pay $2,000 an acre for something that 3 years before had been $200 an acre just because corn had tripled in price? But that's what people were doing. And, of course, we had new crop varieties of seeds, shorter growing season seeds, drought-resistant seeds, frost-resistant. All this stuff came together in a perfect storm to maybe wipe out much of the 92 million acres that's called the Prairie Pothole Region of North America. So here we are, 2016, second to last weekend in January, and it all looks different. In fact, except for the damage that's been done, it all looks a lot like it did in 2008 before it all started. Farmers are abandoning areas that were not fertile grounds. Unfortunately, the damage in a lot of cases has been done. Native prairie, and when I say native prairie, I mean prairie that had been there since the formation of the earth, had never been plowed. Millions of acres of native prairie was ripped up and put into agricultural crops, and lots of that, not all of it, but lots of it now is sitting fallow and is going to be planted back to grass. But it's no longer native prairie. And that is a shame. And as for the oil rigs and everything going on in the Dakotas and in the southern Saskatchewan, of course, they're pulling out at least temporarily. So the good news is the environmental degradation that was on steroids for a period of 5 years has just hit a brick wall at full speed. And we're not sure where the collateral damage is going to be. We're not sure what happened to water quality. We know there's going to be a lot more nitrogen in our streams. We know there's going to be a lot more erosion from lands that were plowed that should not have been farmed. But we also know that we now can take a breath and try to figure out how to secure the most important land of what's left. And that is what is going to have to happen in this period of low commodity prices and low energy prices, because as sure as I'm sitting here talking to you this morning in WGN, there'll be a time again when commodity prices are on a tear and oil and gas prices are on a tear. I wish I knew when. Maybe one of you listening can tell me. That would be great. But there will be a time when this turns itself around again. We weren't ready for 2008 when it came at us. For the five-year period that really followed, we were not ready for the explosion in population and the enormous degradation to the quality of wildlife habitat in this extremely important environmental region of the North American continent. Now, we're seeing what's happened. We can assess it. We can try to figure out how to save the best of what's left, and maybe there'll be an opportunity to reclaim some of the land that was torn up and farmed or torn up and put into oil and gas. Just imagine the crisscrossing of roads that now exist, roads that were heavily traveled just 6-9 months ago, and now they're back to the way they were, except there were no roads before they all started. Now they're just these roads breaking through areas that had never even seen anything but a wagon trail. So much more to come as things evolve, but this is an opportunity for the conservation movement to try to figure, and the agricultural movement and the energy movement, to try to figure out how we get some sense of balance in our development of agriculture and energy in a very, very ecologically significant area of the world, North, South Dakota, Eastern Montana, on up into Southern Canada, a place where very few people live or lived, and a place, though, that is the absolute birthplace to the majority of North American waterfowl and wetland-dependent birds. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors, and when I do, I'm going to take you west to Las Vegas and the SHOT Show, which has just been completed, the Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show, the third largest trade show in the world, and give you a little look into the candy store that was in place, and also talk a little bit about the politics that were taking place. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter and the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Winter is here, and it's always tough on the road, but when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And nothing is tougher than the 2016 Chevy Silverado. Silverado is the longest-lasting, most dependable pickup on the road. With all-steel construction, Silverado is built to tame Chicago's winter weather. And Silverado's towing package offers 11,400 pounds of towing capacity. Perfect for hauling your snowmobiles. I love pulling my neighbors out of their snowdrifts. And right now, you can get $7,250 total savings on a 2016 Chevy Silverado All-Star. $7,250. That really warms my heart. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and get all the details. Or head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer today and pick up a pickup that works as hard as you do, on the road or off. Chevy Silverado is one tough customer.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Hope you're enjoying the show. In the time we have left today, I want to talk about two things, one of which is a lot of fun, and that's going to the biggest candy store in the outdoor industry. That's the SHOT Show, which was just completed in Las Vegas. And the other is about Asian carp in Lake Erie. So the SHOT Show is a gathering of the shooting, hunting, outdoor trades. It used to be a very small show, actually. Believe it or not, it used to be held in Chicago. And it used to be held in a hotel in Chicago. Now, it's held in the biggest convention center in the world in Las Vegas. That gives you some idea of the power of the outdoor recreation industry. It also gives us an insight into the absolute growth of the firearms industry in America. The SHOT Show is black guns, which of course are non-hunting guns, or that's the terminology used for them, and sporting guns, handguns for sporting, handguns for target shooting, military weapons, but it's really the black gun market, as it's called, that is driving the growth in firearms. It's not those of us who go to firearm sales. It's not those of us who go to the gun range and flink a few targets or go to a Northbrook and shoot some clay targets or go hunting and maybe shoot a box of shells at ducks all year. No, we don't drive the shooting sports market in America. What drives the shooting market in America is America's, first of all, concern over the ability to own firearms, and secondly, America's love to go to the target range and shoot hundreds of rounds of high ammunition in rifles and in handguns. And sure, those of us who go and shoot lots of trap and skeet, of which there aren't that many, we have an impact too. But overall, the growth in the SHOT Show has been two things: the enormous growth in gun sales, and then secondly, this area called apparel. Accompanying apparel is technology. And the SHOT Show is filled with the newest inventions in technology to aid people who are hunting, aid people in home defense, aid people in night vision, people who want to do photography. It is a technological, it's unbelievable what's being invented to assist people in the outdoors, hunting in particular. And it makes me wonder, and I want to spend just a moment talking about it, it makes me wonder about fair chase. And I say that in a way not to in any way demean the modern technology that's being used. After all, if we still had bows and arrows and somebody invented a shotgun, people might say, well, that's not fair chase. Look at the gun you've got. Or actually, in the real world, if we had muskets. And now we come along with a beautiful Beretta or Remington automatic and go bang, bang, bang. Whereas a musket loader would take 15 minutes to get off three shells. The musket hunter might have said, that's not fair, that's not sporting. So we certainly have evolved over time. But what I do think is a serious question is mechanized devices to attract game. And whether it be all these new devices that have been invented to replicate ducks swimming and ducks flying and ducks dipping and ducks going under the water. It's unbelievable to see the number of inventions that are for sale that are designed for one thing only, to make it easier to attract waterfowl so they can be shot. And I am the biggest fan of duck hunting that's probably any of you will know, and I think those of you who personally know me know that to be the fact. But I also believe it should be done with skill and not with electronic gadgets. And if it was, if I was king for a day, and unfortunately I won't be, but if I was king for a day, there would be no more electronics of any kind in any kind of hunting. Wouldn't be permitted. Once you're in the blind and once you're hunting, no electronics, no electronic calls, no electronic decoys, no use of drones, none of that. That, to me, cheapens what hunting is all about. I don't think having a really well-honed rifle or shotgun in your hands is cheapening it at all. But I do think having mechanical devices that bob in the water or fly in the air or make noise to attract birds or attract game, that is cheating. And as there are fewer and fewer people who are hunting in America, the public's perception of how we hunt is going to be ever more important. And I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that most of the American public does not hunt, but that they overwhelmingly support hunting as a means to control animal populations and also as a means to fuel our economy and, frankly, to carry on an outdoor recreation heritage that runs back to the founding of America. They will not support over the long haul the cheapening of what I call fair chase. So as we go forward and your catalogs arrive from Cabela's, Bass Pro, and Beans, and everywhere they come from this coming year, have a look at the electronics and the number of pages that they take up in those catalogs. And I guess ask yourself, is this what I'm training my kids to be, a hunter who is dependent on electronics to help them? Or am I trying to train not only my kids, but also am I also myself going out hunting because I enjoy all the elements that are encompassed in it? And at the end of the day, it's my skill against that of an animal or bird, not aided by some kind of an electronic device. So I got about a minute left, and what I just want to close with is we better watch out about the Asian carp in Lake Erie. Yeah, all that talk about closing the Chicago River and having a barrier between the Illinois River and Lake Michigan so the Asian carp wouldn't get in Lake Michigan. For many of you who've listened for a long time and read about this, there are lots of ways for the Asian carp to get in the Great Lakes. And in through the rivers of Ohio into Lake Erie is a sure enough, absolutely up the Ohio and into those rivers, all the way through the state of Ohio, and boom, into Lake Erie. That's how they're going to get there, and word is that they're already there. And unlike Lake Michigan, Lake Erie is a very shallow lake, and the Asian carp could do much better in Lake Erie than they could in Lake Michigan. So if they get into Lake Erie in any kind of numbers, ball game over. At least the ball game of discussing why we would close the Illinois River passage to the Great Lakes, because they're already here. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voices Chicago and America, 720 WGN.